guitarist and singer with a group called Elephant's Memory, and we didn't think twice about it. He was John Lennon. Nobody, I mean, so what? He was just another anti-war protester to us. It's so weird how, you know, like watching Mike Williams and listening to Mike Williams, he talks about the Beatles like they were gods or something. Well, John Lennon was living right there in the village. People would see him on the street. Bob Dylan was living there too. The people said he was addicted to heroin at the time. Talking about 1969, 70, 71. You'd see these people. They were not, you know, people would see John Lennon on the street all the time.
Okay, Lynn, let's listen to the opening of this song a little bit. All right. Hello, everybody. That is Lunatic Fringe by Tom Cochran and Red Rider. That's when it was just called Red Rider. Then it became Tom Cochran and Red Rider. And then it just became Tom Cochran. Well, Tom Cochran broke off. Tom Cochran is from Toronto. And Lynn chose the music tonight. So welcome, everybody. By the way, I changed the link at shortfake.com/restream. So if you are on Restream and you have your own YouTube channels, you can go live with me on your channel. And as a matter of fact, I will encourage anyone in the YouTube tonight. If you have a YouTube account, that means you have a YouTube channel by default. So come in and join me at shortfake.com/Restream and please broadcast this to your channel. You can use the content all you want. A lot of you have YouTube channels that, of course, you don't use because you're not creators, but I would appreciate it because you could leave the video up, and if you got a strike, then it wouldn't really hurt you because you're not using your YouTube channel anyway. So please consider shortfake.com/restream. Please consider simulcasting, and help spread the word. Because if you're not a contributor with value, as in currency, or with posting, or with anything else, this is a great way of doing it. So I know there's many YouTubers out here. I got at least 15 right now. So please consider doing that. And Lynn, how are you tonight? Lynn, how are you tonight? There goes Tom Cochran.
Okay.
All right, as we were talking on the pre-show, I started off as sort of a, I would call myself a conservative consumer of media. So now as a conservative consumer of media, I'm really binging out on the election coverage. I as a fakeologist that we know, and I understand that it's all fake and gay and staged, but it's still fun to just sort of join the mobs and pick a side. Obviously, I'm a Trumper. Only because I'm just right and not left. It's if you want to, there's a million different ways or reasons to vote, and there is no one.
Hey, I got to tell you, there's nothing left about the Democrats.
Okay.
Nothing authentically left about the Democrats.
Okay, that's true.
And as far as what's authentically right among the Republicans, slim and none and slim left on the metro. So I hate it when people attribute ideological motivations to people who are so shallow, they wouldn't even know what the hell you were talking about.
All right. Okay.
So calling, using terms like left, right, communism, fascism, socialism, how many people who use those words even know what the hell they're talking about? Okay. They don't have a freaking clue.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you there. Yeah, I agree. Well,
and I resent it because I was the real thing.
Oh, you were the real thing?
I was a real thing when it meant something to be a leftist, to oppose the Vietnam War. I was the real thing. And these people are nothing like that. They don't challenge authority. They don't stand up to authority. They worship authority.
They're just the corporate. Elite. They work for the corporate.
So what happened? I'll tell you what happened. Everybody got prostituted. They got pimped out.
Sure.
They turned into whores. And hey, you can have a left-wing whore, right-wing whore, moderate whore, extreme whore. You can have a QAnon whore. You can
choose
have any
your whore.
Right.
Choose your whore. Yeah, I agree with you. And
it bugs me because I saw people make incredible sacrifices back in those days. They sacrificed careers. They sacrificed scholarships. I personally lost a scholarship because I got arrested. I don't even want to go to even compare now to 1968 would be an outrage.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Lynn, I just want to tell people what I'm listening to. I'm watching this kid, Nick Shirley. This guy's great. He must be in his 20s. He goes around with his mom and just talks to people. And he's pretty good. He's not the best speaker, but he's a bit of a Trumper as well. But I just find it fun. I think he's getting the true pulse. So he's spending his last week touring the country in Pennsylvania, which is the largest swing state by electoral college, apparently. And I'm just having fun watching him talk to these people because these are the people that are voting, and it's really good. So this is Nick Shirley. I'll recommend him. Let me just play a little bit of this. He got somebody into a bit of a battle here.
American citizens. And he will. You're going to vote for the end of our country as we know it.
I heard this 8 years ago, 4 years ago.
They overthrew democracy when they threw Joe Biden out.
And she supports policies that will aid me specifically as a woman and as a member of the LGBT community.
Who are you going to be voting for?
Well, I just voted. Come to find out.
I'm here in the great state of Pennsylvania. This is the most important state in the entire election. Out of all the 7 swing states, Pennsylvania holds the most electoral votes at 19.
Anyway, I like this kid, so I recommend if you like this kind of stuff like I do, check him out. Have you ever seen him, Lynn?
No, not this one. No.
Okay. I'm going to put a show.
I lived in Philadelphia for like six, 7 years in the 70s, and I'm very familiar with Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I have nothing good to say about Philadelphia. When I was living there between 1974 and 1970, well, I guess it was like 5 years, about 5 years in the 70s, we called it Filthy-delphia.
Filthy-delphia.
Filthy-delphia. And you know what? It's even worse now.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Is he standing? It looks like he's standing.
No, he's in Pittsburgh. He's in Pittsburgh.
Oh, in Pittsburgh. Well,
I think right here he's in Pittsburgh. Then he went down. So it was about 50-50 in Pittsburgh, a little towards Kamala. Then he went down to Lancaster, and that was more red. And then he slid over to Philly.
Well, they say the Amish, who I didn't think ever voted, are.
Yeah, they said they're coming out. They're coming out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that. This will be a repeat, I think, of 2020. It'll go right.
All we need to know about Pennsylvania elections is John Fetterman. That's it. That's
what
you need
to him. Is he talking? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not now. Not who he is now, because they probably have several different actors.
I agree with that.
The role of John, they all look different to me.
Yeah, I agree.
But the fact that they were able to run him. You know, that was scripted using Trump, because they had a perfectly legitimate conservative candidate. Her name was, she was an African-American woman, very articulate, very conservative. And she would have been
going back. Because we are about moving forward. So ours is a fight for the future.
My wife can't stand this woman.
It is a fight for freedom.
I will bring back.
I just want to see there's some Fetterman here.
Kamala broke it, and I will fix it. So there you have a little bit of flavor from over the weekend on the board right here now. This is what the polling suggests on the national level. Then I'll take you down to the battleground states and let you know what we're trying to pick up there. New York Times, dead even. Wall Street Journal's got Trump up too. CNN, dead even. ABC has Kamala up too. Our Fox News survey.
Tell the media it's spinning because they needed it. They need it as a dead heat. This is how it works.
Yeah, of course. Of course they're going to script it like this. I don't believe a word of it.
I don't either. I want to just see where this idiot, this Fetterman goofball is. Okay, here he is. Sorry.
But also acknowledging that it exists. And anybody spends time driving around and you can see the intensity, it's astonishing.
Maybe come Wednesday or Thursday of next.
Yeah, we're...
That's not the original Fetterman we saw during the election. Come on.
I know. I don't even. He's been in. I haven't noticed
different
him.
Voice, different. It's crazy.
Yeah. So he's another switcheroo person.
Yes. Yes. Got to be.
Yeah.
And at the time, as just to go back to what I was saying, this is what infuriates me about Trump and the MAGA people.
Yeah.
They had the perfect candidate. An African-American female who is super conservative and very articulate.
Who's that?
We point out Mayor Eric Adams.
Oh, gosh. Now I can't remember her name now.
Okay.
But she was the one. And instead, Trump got behind a former liberal Democrat who was a television doctor, Dr. Oz.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. You hear the frustration and rage in my voice.
Yeah. Rage.
Also acknowledging that it exists. And anybody spends time.
This is not John Fetterman. He doesn't talk anything like
this. Intensity. It's astonishing.
Astonishing.
I was doing an event in Indiana.
Let's take a look at the one from maybe.
Go back to John Fetterman back in 2020. Come on, it's crazy.
This is supposed to be 8 years ago.
Mr. Fetterman.
It's the commercial, I guess.
Yeah.
You need any help?
I'm running for the U.S. Senate, kid. I need all the help I can get.
You're running for Senate?
Sure.
Where's your suit and your flag pin?
Yeah, you know, this hair is such bullshit.
Oh, hey.
The point I'm making here is they had...
something.
Yeah, they could have taken that seat if they'd have picked this woman as their candidate. But Trump, he dumped the authentic... Reasonably, look, he even looks different. He looks like 10 years younger. They dumped the ideal candidate in order to run Donald
Trump.
Face was drooping a little bit, and you got to get to the hospital. And I was like, no, I got to get to this event. You
know,
the primary
is
like a couple days ago. And they insisted on going to the hospital.
A year ago on
Colbert. That stroke nearly claimed my life. And, you know, nearly dying as a major downer. And I'm... I'm so great.
Well, this is his uniform, this hoodie, this black hoodie. So you say it's a different one, huh? Okay.
You know, I'm going to find the name of this woman who would have been, I thought she would have been the perfect candidate to run for the Senate. And Trump dissed her.
Are Democrats right to be nervous about Pennsylvania?
Hold on a second. You know,
no,
this is crazy.
I mean, like whatever the polls are, it's like this is exactly what I've been expecting.
Anyway, we're playing politics tonight. Please forgive us on our indulgent here. My indulgent. Wait, here's
okay. Here we go. Primary election results.
Here's him from 11 years ago.
All right.
Behemoth of a steel mill and the first steel mill of its kind to employ back then was a revolutionary technology known as the Bessemer technology that allowed steel to be purified and strengthened, that allowed the creation of skyscrapers and what have you.
All right, this is him talking 11 years ago. I never heard of the guy. Oh, he's the mayor.
Yeah, he was the mayor of some town.
Of Braddock, Pennsylvania. That was the site of Andrew Carnegie's, or Andrew Carnegie.
Kathy Barnett! Barnett!
I never heard of her.
Of course not! Of course not. I'm going to share this screen because it shows you what the media does.
Okay.
Shows you what the media does. And this infuriates me.
And then we're
going to
talk about, I watched Biden today.
Here you go.
Build a bridge in Baltimore.
All right. Who is Kathy Barnett? The black Republican woman who could be the GOP nominee for Senate in Pennsylvania. May 2022. Those were the midterm elections.
Okay.
And Trump would not support her, even though she was a real authentic conservative.
Okay.
I don't know. Do we need to go through this? Maybe we shouldn't.
No, no. I just want to see what she looked like or who it was.
Oh, well, they don't even have it. Here she is. Hold on a second.
Those are two most powerful weapons. And there are a lot of truisms I can talk about in regards to Islam. I spent a number of years studying it and reading the Quran, talking to Muslims, just to get an understanding.
So, she's talking Islam. That's no good.
This Kathy Barnett was very articulate, and she would have been the perfect candidate. And
she had an Islamophobic tweet that knocked her out for sure.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, she was here. Christian. She was openly very Christian, a Christian evangelical. Okay, I'm not, but that did. But what Trump did was unforgivable.
David Pecker said it's an actor, a mask wearing actor. Okay, a Fetterman, that is. Okay.
Trump refused to support Kathy Barnett, who probably would have gotten all those black votes in Philadelphia, in the cities. And instead, he got behind Dr. Oz.
And didn't he fail?
Dr. Oz was never a conservative. Right. He was a television doctor. This is Trump again. This is the poisonous, evil effect that Trump has on politics.
Okay.
And so, of course, Pennsylvania voters, they weren't going to vote for Dr. Oz. So they voted for John Fetterman, and that's why we got him in there.
Okay. Are you voting this year, Lynn?
I don't know. What I'm planning on doing is wearing my COVID hoax shirt.
Yeah.
Getting in line at the polling place.
Okay.
As to vote, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to vote for RFK. Or for Jill Stein.
Well, RFK, is he still on the ballot? Or
the ballot for Maryland. Yes, he is.
He's still on the ballot. Okay.
One way, you know, I don't know. I don't even care about voting. I just want to stand in line wearing my COVID hoax, Big Pharma, Meta PSYOP.
Yeah.
Sure, everybody.
If you had to vote, would you pick a side?
Well, I don't think the votes are counted, and that's what I wanted to get to.
Yeah. But if you did, you know.
Election fakery.
I'm gonna be like Nick Shirley. Who would you vote for? Trump or Kamala?
Well, we probably would prefer Trump. But then again, I don't know. You know, I don't know whether that would be. You know, that's hard to say. What's better for us as fakeologists?
Yeah, that's true. We should talk in that context. You're correct. Yeah. I think Trump is the best actor of all time. So he's gonna. He's going to go along with whatever the script says. He went along with the fake assassination. We know. Right,
exactly.
Yeah, we know he's a good actor. So we know the Joe Rogan thing was another case of him not engaging and just being just faking it, you know, saying, oh, here, I got hit right here and here. OK, well, and Joe just let him off. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, it's now apparent that a lot of people think he faked that stuff, but
for different reasons than fakeologists think.
And if we have time, I'll get into to Trump as the crisis actor in chief at the El Paso Walmart event.
Okay, good. We can do that
later on. I want to get out.
Let's get as much fakeology in as we can.
Right. Election fakery in the United States versus Germany. I'm sharing my screen on that.
Okay, we're looking at that now. This is on fakeologistforums.com. Make sure you sign up, fakeologistforums.com.
Right. Now, machine voting. The very first election I remember in my life, I was 5 years old, and I was carried into the booth on my father's shoulder to watch voting. And he flipped these. He went behind the curtain, and then my mother took me in with her as well.
Where's this?
Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
And 1956 was incumbent Dwight David Eisenhower running again against Adlai Stevenson. And my parents were supporters of Stevenson because they're very much Democrats, diehard Democrats. They worshipped Saints Franklin and Eleanor and Harry Truman and all that. So And I remember sitting on my father's shoulder as he carried me in to the booth and then watching him vote. And I didn't believe it. I said, well, how do you know, just because you're flipping that lever in the machine, that it really matters? It just struck me.
So there was a machine in 1956. Okay, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
what does it even look like? I got to find that.
Just like they look now.
Oh, wow.
They're not that different from the, well, now they've got the touch screen, the electronic touch screens. In those days, they had a curtain and a booth. You went in the curtain, and there were levers. There was a lever next to every name. And you pull down the lever. So I was skeptical from the beginning. I didn't believe in elections without written paper ballots. That's what I wanted to see. Because my concept of an election was, you write a name in a ballot or you check a box, and somebody has to count that paper ballot. And I didn't see how putting it in a machine was going to help that happen. Now, I participated in elections all through the 70s. Actually, the first election I participated in, I wasn't even old enough to vote. We campaigned. We went clean for Gene, for Senator Eugene McCarthy of Wisconsin, who was opposing the Vietnam War. And we really thought that that was a victory for us because as a result of him getting 49% of the vote in the New Hampshire primary, Lyndon Johnson, who was president at the time, had to go on the air and say he was not going to run again. So we regarded that as a victory. But then Bobby Kennedy came along and basically stole, co-opted all that.
Does that look like what it was?
Does what look like what it was?
Look on my screen. Is that the voting machine, this big monstrosity?
Let me blow it up. Well, no, I don't remember it being that big at all.
There's the lever.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it looked like that. It wasn't okay. That big. No, it was not that big.
This is in New York.
Well, they've got a lot of ballot. Who knows? Probably a lot of ballot initiatives. But yeah, it was in a small booth behind a curtain. You should be able to see the curtain there.
Okay.
So getting back to this black, look, we've known that the machines are hackable forever. Forever. So I posted in the forum, election fakery in the United States versus Germany. I posted a link to Bev Harris of Black Box Voting, who way back in 2006 told us, he says, as you can see, we're still in the same boat. We've revamped this. This is an ongoing study, proof of fraud. Election officials wouldn't let me see the ballots. Then they destroyed them in violation of the law. This goes on and on and on.
Does this look like it?
I don't know why you're so preoccupied with a booth with a curtain and some leaves.
No, I want to see the machine.
Yes, that's exactly what it looked like right
I
here.
Just never knew there was a machine.
That's
in
exactly what it. Yes, that is what
it says
like.
Here. Eisenhower versus Stevenson. So yeah. So they distributed these machines at every voting booth.
Well, I don't know that. That I see. This is what people don't get.
Yeah.
Voting is up to the states.
Yes, it is.
It's not a federal activity.
Yes. Well, the county administers it too.
Right.
By county.
Right. And it's up to the state legislature to pick the electors.
Yes.
Who go to Washington and confirm a president, and they can put anybody they want in there.
Yes. And in any fashion.
Right. And they did in the beginning. In the beginning, the state legislatures handpicked the electors. And they handpicked George Washington and then John Adams and then Thomas Jefferson. And we didn't actually have universal manhood suffrage until the election of 1828.
Right.
And this was after the fiasco of 1824, where people were convinced that Andrew Jackson should have won. But the, I guess, Henry Clay, who was the Senate Majority Leader. He was either Senate Majority Leader or Speaker. Now, Henry Clay cut a deal with John Quincy Adams because the election was thrown into the House of Representatives. It was that close. It was in dispute.
Right.
And the expression was the Puritan and the blackleg. Henry Clay was called a blackleg. I don't know why they called it. It had something to do with Westerners, you know. And the Puritan was, of course, John Quincy Adams, son of John Adams. And everybody, it was like a major stolen election in the eyes of people. And so between 1824 and 1828, a whole number of states, a majority of states, reformed their electoral processes and established pretty much universal manhood suffrage. Before that, you had to be a property owner to vote.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that would be better.
Yeah. They're...
When I watch these people on the street, give their reasons.
Taxpayers. Yeah. Taxpayers should probably be the ones should have a greater vote than people who don't pay any taxes.
Anonymous says David Duke is also voting for Stein. There you go, Lynn. You got company.
Right. And that's because Stein is the only one who's calling out the Israelis for stealing all that land in Gaza. But
I see. That's at shortfake.com forward.
Well, I would advise voters in Michigan, if you're Arab or Muslim, in Michigan, I know there are a lot of you out there.
That's where the biggest
Dearborn and all that. Yeah.
Dearborn stem.
You need to protest being disrespected by Kamala and Biden and the Democratic Party because of all the money they're giving to Israel. And you should vote for Jill Stein because she is actively opposing that. Okay. And that would be a way of showing your contempt and disgust with the Democratic Party establishment by voting for a Green candidate. That's what people do in Europe. But, yeah. You know, I can tune on C-SPAN Washington Journal, listen for a whole hour and not hear a single person tell me that they're voting for a third party independent candidate. Because Americans don't even know they exist. Yes, Americans are stupid. So anyway, black box voting established how flawed the machines were 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it became a whole movement. And so if you get in a discussion with somebody and you say, hey, you know, our elections are fake, they're rigged. And they say, well, prove that. We'll send them to these sites, black box voting. Right. And both of these sites show you exactly how it's done.
And by the way, we're going to be on next week on election night. Lynn will be here.
Oh, you've already drafted me.
Well, it's Tuesday. It's your day anyway.
Right, you're right.
So election coverage with Lynn. Yeah, okay, I know this is a truther channel. We're giving a slight fakeologist truther bent, so calm down, everybody in the chat, or one person in the chat. It's okay. You know, we do live in the system, so right, we can talk about the system.
And you're going to encounter normies who still believe in this ritual.
Right.
And I can
think of that Muslim guy who was an American that we put on FakoTube.
Yes.
Talking about the ritual of voting.
The ritual voting. Right.
This guy has. Let me put him up on the screen here.
So are elections an illusion? Of course. Democracy is an illusion. Of course
it is. Play a little bit of this guy.
Just came on. I don't know if someone already used, but I just want to know your thoughts on the U.S. election. Who's less evil? The candidates, especially stopping the genocide in.
Kamala Harris will win.
Okay. You want to watch the rest of that?
Yeah, I watched that. I don't know if he's... I don't know. I kind of doubt... They'd have a real hard time giving it to Harris. Just because
I don't know. It can go either way. Yeah. Both sides are fully back, so it doesn't matter really.
Right.
But yeah, I can see it going back both ways.
They're from... you know, there's black box voting. Confessions of an Elections Hacker.
Yes.
There's somebody who tells you exactly how they do it. Now, this subject carried on and on a lot. And HBO actually did a special called Hacking Democracy.
I watched that. It was that's where the woman was crying. I remember.
Oh, yeah. 10 years. And here's the Huffington Post. Can we see this? I hope we can.
Yeah, we're looking at it. I watched the movie, actually. It was quite depressing. I think that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, right. So we've known about this for a long time. You know, I could tell you the experiences I had in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in New York City. That campaign, that's the only time I ever campaigned for a major party. Every other time in my life, I campaigned for third parties. I was part of an effort to create something called the U.S. Labor Party in the 70s, and we ran independent candidates, and we watched them cheat. We watched how they cheated. At that time, we all lived in the same neighborhood, so because we had our office was right around the corner on 45th and Chestnut in Philadelphia, in the west side of Philadelphia. And we all voted for our candidate, and our votes didn't even show up in the ballot. And we all lived in the same neighborhood, in that district, in that precinct. We should have at least gotten some votes in that precinct. We didn't get any. So, you know, I could tell you over and over again, elections are stolen. They're rigged. And 10 years after HBO showed that movie, Hacking Democracy, electoral vulnerabilities still exist. So let's get to this question of the machines. Because I wanted to compare the United States to Germany. Because I heard a report that the German Supreme Court essentially said, you can't use machines to tabulate votes in elections because it violates our Constitution. You have to have hand-counted ballots. Article 38 of the German Basic Law defines the principles for the electoral process: general, direct, free, equal, and secret. Any introduction of electronic voting has to meet the demands posed by these principles. In 2009, the German Federal Constitutional Court, I guess that's the equivalent of our Supreme Court, dealt with the compatibility of electronic modes of elections with the Basic Law. Until today, this ruling is the foundation of German policymaking in this regard. Oh, no, no, no. Therefore, the public needs to be able to monitor all steps of the electoral process and to verify the compliance with Article 38. This is Article 38 of the German Constitution. The ruling corresponds with the demand for transparency, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right here. Now, listen to this wording here, because this document goes on forever. I would never want to condemn our listeners to have to go through this document the way I did.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is that the German Supreme Court said, you can't use electronic machine voting unless you can guarantee that it can't be hacked and it can't be messed with. And since you can't guarantee that, it would not be constitutional. Consequently, unless this criterion is met, the introduction of e-voting in national elections is unconstitutional in Germany.
Nice.
So, but you go on to read this document, and what do you find out? Who do you think would be pushing the most for digital voting in Germany? Maybe even voting on the internet. Guess which political party is pushing that the hardest?
Yeah.
The Greens.
The Greens, the left.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's because
that tells you how tightly controlled they are.
Okay. Or they're just digital. They just like everything digital.
They, just like
they want else. They want the control grid.
Right. Concerning security, the Constitutional Court, this is back in Germany, states in its ruling that the manipulation of software and hardware has to be eliminated beyond doubt so that the principles of voting, especially the principle of equal votes, are respected. That's to 2009. The electronic voting system presents a vulnerable point for the legitimation of the democratic system. Enemies from within and from outside the country may attempt to hack the system and alter the election results. At least they're honest enough to admit that. But Americans won't admit it because Americans are freaking lazy. And they don't want to think about this. And they don't want to have to go to the trouble of hand counting ballots. That's probably it. So if you run into a normie who still thinks his vote counts, think of it this way. Think of it like the double slit experiment and Schrodinger's cat, right? Where the indeterminate character of an invisible particle of light decides whether the cat lives or dies. That's the collapse of the wave function in quantum mechanics and in physics. or relative, you know, quantum physics. Well, that's what your vote is. It may matter or it may not, depending on whether they choose to count it or not. Just like Schrodinger's cat. Just like Schrodinger's cat. Right? The particle may be of a certain kind and the cat gets to live, or the particle may be of a different kind and the cat gets to die. But do you know how tiny that particle is and how many of them there are when you run a beam of light through the double slit? So that's how I think of voting. And like I say, if you run into a normie that can't accept this, you have to send them to Bev Harris's site, Black Box Voting, which has been around forever.
Okay.
Or have them watch Hacking Democracy if they need to convince themselves that elections are fake. Now, there's a long history to this. The genius of Julius Caesar. Because I think the Romans were so far ahead of us on this. They had no illusions about it. For Caesar, wealth was a way to buy votes. And that is how he established his power base in the city of Rome. By buying candidates and buying elections. And everybody took it as... The Romans didn't have any problem with paying people to vote for you. They thought that was perfectly legitimate. We're supposed to not be able to do that here. But of course, that's always going on. What is the presidency? So what am I saying? One, democracy is fake. Elections are fake. Mm-hmm. We can prove that. Actually, that's been demonstrated over and over and over again for the last 20 years or longer. So the question then becomes, is what is the significance of the presidency? What does the president, what does it matter who's president? Let me see if I can find this. My contention is that the presidency itself is an illusion.
Yes.
Okay. And the president is essentially a crisis actor in chief. So here's a video of Kamala Harris explaining her role as crisis actor in chief, her fitness, her qualification to be crisis actor in chief.
Okay, let's go.
Watch this.
Yeah,
watch this. It's very brief.
This is today's.
We have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke. And you can talk about if you're the wokest or woker, but just stay more woke than less woke.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's going to be quite the joke. Go ahead, Lynn. Unmute yourself. I think you muted yourself, Lynn.
Yeah. I posted a link to a video. I wonder if they changed it.
What was the point of listening to her talk about woke?
I didn't want to hear her talk. Oh, here it is. The Instagram. I played the wrong one. Here it is.
Okay.
This is the Instagram video.
Well, I can't stand listening.
Yeah, I know. The sound, for some reason, they automatically mute me.
Okay. Oh, that's because it was echoing.
How many students, if you can raise your hand... Any time from kindergarten through 12th grade had to participate at school in an active shooter drill. And I'd ask the media who is here to take a look at these hands. Because I don't think that people who are of a different generation understand what you guys have been through. But here's what I'd ask the students here, if you could just indulge me for a second.
Okay. Yeah,
I'd ask the-
okay, yeah, so here we go. All children today go through the trauma-based mind control of shooter drills. Mm-hmm. Make sure you unmute yourself, Lynn. Unmute, unmute, unmute.
All right, look. She's directly asking this audience, and I'll bet most of these kids aren't old enough to vote. Let me play that again.
Older adults to pay attention to this.
Older adults. So look, she says, older adults, pay attention. Here's where they create a generational divide over the issue of guns.
How many students, if you can raise your hand, any time from kindergarten through 12th grade had to participate at school in an active shooter drill?
Imagine that. If you'd have asked me what an active shooter drill was when I was in high school, I wouldn't have known what the hell you were talking about.
Yeah, you did just nuclear drills.
Right. So she's coming right out in the open with this.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's more, too, because
I also want to cover the Baltimore press conference today.
Okay,
because it wraps up what we were saying at the beginning?
Because Trump functioned as crisis actor in chief at the El Paso, Texas Walmart.
Oh, right. Yeah, let's see this. Yeah.
And he performed consistently in this role. In case you think this wasn't fake, I want you to watch Anderson Cooper interviewing these crisis actors.
In El Paso tonight, a little boy is recovering from broken fingers, a baby, 2 months old. We mentioned him at the top of the program. His name is Paul. He's 2 months old, and he owes his life to his mom, Jordan, who, according to the family, did what mothers do. They protect their kids. When he gets a little older, he'll be able to hear the story himself, but sadly, he won't be able to hear it from his mom. She died saving his life, and he'll have that memory with him forever. Joining us now is Jordan's aunt and uncle, Liz Terry and Jesse Jamrowski. They are brother and sister. Liz and Terry, thank you so much for being with us. I'm so sorry for what you are going through. It's unimaginable. Jesse, can you just tell us about Jordan and Andre and the kind of people they were?
They were beautiful. They were very hardworking. They were amazing parents to their three children.
Watch
they
her smile.
Gave what they could for them.
Yeah, this is just duping
for support. And most importantly, they gave everything they could in love. And that's what ultimately we'll remember about them.
And Liz, I understand that Jordan, she dropped off one child and I think a cheerleading practice, correct me if I'm wrong, and they went to the Walmart to buy school supplies. Is that right?
Yes, they were their oldest child, Skylin, who turned 5 yesterday.
Yeah, you're echoing that.
Was dropped off at cheer practice, and I think they had a closed practice. So Andre and Jordan and baby Paul had headed to Walmart to do some school supply shopping.
Paul's just two months old. I mean, it's so incredibly recent that they must have been so joyful.
Oh, they were. They just celebrated their one-year anniversary, July 30th, their one-year wedding anniversary. Baby Paul is a beautiful baby. It was our middle brother, Jordan's father, his first boy. He had three girls, Jordan included.
There we go with the smile. Okay, we get it.
Two granddaughters, so I don't think he'd ever thought he'd see the day he'd have a boy.
Yeah. Duping delight, as usual. Unmute, Lynn. Yeah, when you play audio, you got to mute, but as soon as you stop, you got to unmute.
Right. So I wanted to explore this El Paso Walmart thing a little bit because it shows you the president's role as crisis actor in chief.
Yeah, just show us there.
Whoever gets put in there, installed, whether it's Trump or Harris or whoever it is, has to function as the crisis actor in chief, and according to script. So... let's see. Oh, right. Let me remind you what happened with that El Paso. So you just saw that was the El Paso right here. You could be the El Paso Walmart event.
Are you going to share the screen?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me do that.
And don't forget, go to fakeologist.blog. We've got a couple more posts. We've got the conspiracy tax where it ends up, this guy is saying, the conspiratainment consumers like you guys,
we pay.
You're
for
the
it.
Ones that pay for the crisis actor funds. I'm not quite. I can't remember why they think that. I wouldn't give any money on that. So I'm not,
no. But the mention of Richard D. Hall bothered me. We can get into a discussion of that a little bit later.
Yeah.
Next time.
You got to bring that up with Gemma. She's a champion of him.
I know. Well, I mean, it's like Alex Jones and Sandy Hook. I mean, well, not quite.
Very similar.
So Trump went down to El Paso for this Walmart shooting, and he met with the hero. The hero, Glendon Oakley, U.S. Army Specialist. You could be a movie star the way you look. Trump, that's Trump. Donald Trump talking to the hero.
Yeah.
Trump heaps praise on hero Army veteran who braved Walmart massacre gunfire to rescue terrified children as President and Melania tore El Paso after Dayton spat with Democrats. I don't know what that's about. Donald Trump met with survivors of the weekend shooting in El Paso Wednesday. He spoke with U.S. Army Specialist Glendon Oakley, who saved crying children. Trump praised Oakley, telling him, "You could be a movie star the way you look." He then looked to hand him a medal before urging him to visit the White House. So he gave him a medal. The president and the first lady had earlier visited the University Medical Center. The couple were greeted in El Paso by protesters demanding gun control reform.
All right.
Right. Here's the Daily Mail reporting of that. And this is critically important that the president does this. This is his role right here. So whatever happened to Glendon Oakley, the hero? Oh, my. U.S. Army specialist, whom Trump celebrated as the hero of the El Paso Walmart shooting, according to Wikipedia, Oakley was found dead in his quarters at Fort Bliss on April 8th, 2020. No cause of death was stated, but the possibility of foul play was denied. What happened was this. When you go to Wikipedia, it says... Oh,
actually,
wow.
They took the page away.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
Page is gone.
No. This can't be right.
Yeah, you clicked the link.
I was just there. All right, here we go. Glendon Oakley Jr. I got it. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Right. Born in 96, died in 2020, was a United States Army soldier who was called a hero after helping escort unaccompanied children during the 2019 El Paso shooting. His tale went viral, earning him an Army Commendation Medal, but later it prompted skeptical comments from police, who said they could not verify Oakley's claims. Authorities did not interview the people who were at the mall, the Walmart, I guess, because of the distance, and therefore cannot verify Oakley's story. What the hell does that mean? Authorities did not interview the people who were at the mall because of the distance. What the hell does that mean, because of the distance?
They couldn't come down from Washington?
How stupid is that?
Crazy.
We have no, quote, we have no independent confirmation to support his claims, Sergeant Enrique Carrillo said. Nobody has come forward and told us that their child or anyone else was saved. Since then, Oakley was held at the Bell County Jail. A detail from Fort Bliss was sent to extradite him for being AWOL, said Master Sergeant Vin Stevens. And it goes on and on and on.
Interesting.
Oakley was recruited, blah, 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 blah. El Paso shooting, right here.
And he's Oakley the son of another military man, so he's...
Right. Oakley was praised by El Paso Police Chief Greg Allen for saving many lives. During his El Paso visit on August 8, 2019, President Donald J. Trump met Oakley and remarked, "What a job he did." And you can watch that video. Oakley was found dead in his quarters at Fort Bliss.
And don't forget, Trumpy was busy praising CC, the fireman that was allegedly shot in the assassination. Yeah. Comparatory to this guy.
They spell the name wrong on the jacket up there in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, what's that? What's that for? Is that a signal for all us truthers?
Yeah, they were sloppy. They were sloppy.
No, I think they... Yeah, you think they did that on purpose?
I think they were sloppy.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Either way, it's a joke.
I don't think they... You watch the performance by those crisis actors. What do you think happened with this guy, Glendon Oakley? First of all, do you think that's even a real person?
No.
Just a fabric, a digital fabrication.
Sure.
But the point I'm making here is that this is what presidents are for.
Yes, I agree with you on that.
He's perfect. A crisis actor in chief. He says, well, what is the presidency? Well, he's a crisis actor in chief. So the thing was, participating in an integrated capstone event, an active shooter drill, and then getting to meet the president and be praised as a hero may be hazardous to the future of your identity, because you could end up dying in an apparent suicide, I guess, because that's what happened in this case. Does anybody have any explanation for the Brendan Oakley, Glendon Oakley narrative? Who can explain that? Here's Beto O'Rourke, who stepped in at El Paso.
So reaction is coming in from.
Oh, this goes on and on and on.
I want to get to Baltimore next, though. So why don't we wrap that one up? Because Baltimore is where you're from. It's where you've lived your whole life.
People who've forgotten the El Paso shooting, there was a manifesto. And the manifesto apparently went on and on about Mexican immigrants. And this particular event, this El Paso Walmart event, they really loaded it up ideologically to target MAGA people and people who were complaining about the border. Because El Paso is right on the border. And then they ran the Uvalde event. Not too long after, about a year or two, I guess they ran the Uvalde event after Biden came back in.
Okay. Yeah.
Almost exactly the same kind of thing. Almost exactly the same kind of thing. So the idea, there was definitely an ideological agenda to the El Paso Walmart shooting, because they go on here for 10 minutes interviewing this expert, this law professor, about the threat represented by right-wing extremists and Nazis who are objecting to people crossing the border illegally. So this was a heavily loaded issue for something that was a completely fake event that they dragged Trump down there.
And let's remind people that on that topic, just quickly, when I was watching some of the people talk on Nick Shirley's Streeter interviews, the people that are most vehemently opposed to the line jumpers, because that's what they are the immigrants that came through the normal way, and it took over 10 years to get in.
Yeah, they have to pay a lawyer. Of course.
Oh, it costs tens of thousands of dollars. And by the way, have you heard of CBP, the CBP app? What was it called? The CBP app, the Customs Border Patrol app. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, they have their own app. Doesn't everybody have an app?
No. The federal government created this app. And the guy that revealed it to me is this kid who was interviewing a Haitian in Charlevoix, Pennsylvania. So there's an app that the federal government created that you just download. And basically it gets you on a plane in Mexico to fly to your wherever they want you in the United States. It's called the CBP Customs Border Patrol One app. It's a huge thing that I've never even heard of.
And that's in other words, the immigrants are supposed to use this app. I assume it's in Spanish or it's in whatever it has. Oh, I'll bet it has all kinds of foreign languages in it built in.
Oh, yeah. So here it is here. This is fascinating. This is what you've never heard of. The CBP One mobile app.
This is population replacement, folks.
I know, but this is how they are jumping the queue. So they've created this whole automated system. And it's free. Apple app. And they have it the wrong way. Yeah, the iPhone store and the Google Play store. But it's fascinating. And I never heard of it until this kid was interviewing the migrants here. By the way, we got a caller in her. We'll say hi to...
Hold time, 2 minutes.
Hello, caller in her.
Hi, it's Greg.
Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tim. How are you?
Well, say hi to Lynn.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Lynn. How are you doing?
Okay.
Have you heard of the CBP1 mobile app?
Not until now.
I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, well, you're not an immigrant, but this is how they they get you start the processing in Mexico. Fill out the app. Next thing you know, you're on a plane.
So I heard a guest on Alex Zek's podcast recently say that the reason they're bringing in so many illegal immigrants is to back the dollar. It's backed by American citizens.
Okay.
U.S. dollar.
Well, yeah. It's a numbers thing. As they kill off the existing ones, or they don't reproduce,
they
keep the numbers up. Yeah, I think that's I agree with that. That concept.
Don't they get like food stamps? And in other words, they don't.
No, no, it's for security. Security on the. They get what is it? They're worth $1 million to the
insured.
No, not just insurance. Just for. I can't remember. We talked about it before where they create a bond for every citizen and borrow. You can borrow up to $1 million. You know about that, Greg. You explain it.
Yeah. I don't think I can explain it, but I agree with what you're saying.
We thought they were simply importing cheap labor the way they always
have. Well, that too. That's a big thing.
To break unions, to break strikes, to keep wages low. I talked about the window washers.
Yes and yes.
On the high risers, in the 90s.
Yes and yes, yeah.
So, yeah, they always said that. But now you're right. Apparently there's a ballot measure in New York State that actually allows illegals to vote.
Oh, it's all over the place. Yeah,
they want to do that now. That's what they want to do. So
basically, they just simplified the application process. You get a number in line. You can wait in Southern. You can wait in Mexico, and then they'll come down and pick you up on a plane and fly you in.
But I wanted to say something about that Aurora, Colorado Venezuelan gang story briefly, because it was mentioned the other night by Tim.
Oh, wait. Let's do your the Baltimore story, because this is your specialty here, because we're almost up against an hour.
People are asking whether it was demolished. And frankly, we have come out to our forum here. We got a whole thread here.
Yeah, it's a good thread.
And we've got the video of the video they supplied of
this
its collapse. And you can watch this yourself and decide. It was a perfect demolition. The whole bridge was taken down just by this boat hitting a pillar. It was the most stupid thing I've ever seen. And there are plenty of problems with the video. So,
this one here.
When, as we were leaving the area, and then I saw first responders my whole way home. They just kept passing us.
I mean, we've seen this because we watched.
Yeah, we've seen all this. There's a video of the actual collapse itself. They speeded it up a little bit. Because if you look at the traffic on the bridge, you can tell they speeded it up and edited it, and there's cuts in it and everything else. And then, as soon as the boat hits the pylon, the whole bridge comes down from one end to the other. It's the most stupid thing I've ever seen. What do you want me to say? It's like
a Tinker Toy. Everyone remember Tinker Toys?
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Now, maybe it was built to collapse that way. Who knows?
I'd say it was by the same crew who took the official video with overdubs, which would have been Allah Akbar in a different context. Fake as this is by itself here. We've seen far and heard far too many of these "Oh my God" video soundtracks.
Right. The conclusion can only be that the video footage has
been
doctored.
What the absolute?
What the fuck?
All right.
Dude, no way.
Well,
watch that shit.
Yeah, the mayor even said it looked like something out of a movie.
Yeah, they told you.
They told you, yeah.
They told you. And today, the purpose of today's, I watched the news conference just because I go to the White House's YouTube channel. There's only 150 people watching this YouTube channel and the comments are turned off. Wow, did people really not care about the president?
But look at how expensive it was to set up this event.
Oh, it was a big event.
Yeah, I posted pictures of, look at that, they got a grandstand there.
Oh, it was big.
Yeah, huge.
And every level of government spoke today, and Joe
Biden. But Kamala wasn't there. Kamala wasn't there.
No Kamala, but that's good. Yeah, no
they
Kamala.
They said Biden.
But Biden was just busy slurring
words. And if you watch that video and listen to the mayor, Brandon Scott.
Yeah, I watched him. He was
he sounds like such an insecure little pussy. That's what he sounds like.
He looks like a kid.
Yeah, he says, licking, oh, thank you, President Biden.
Yeah, he was licking Grandpa Biden's you know what. Yeah.
Yeah, and you should have heard how insecure.
I listened to it.
Yeah, what a clown.
I watched it. I watched it as preparation for tonight because I know that we said that the federal government back in the day, back when this happened, we said they'll probably pay for the entire thing.
Right.
And Biden announced a $3 billion fund for all the ports, including this one. He's going to pay for the entire bridge. I think he's going to rehabilitate the tunnel so it can accommodate double stack.
Biden won't even be in office by the time that
happens. No, I know, but they're going to redo I guess there's a rail tunnel so it can accommodate the double stack rail cars, the double stack containers. So, yeah, they're paying for the whole thing. Pretty much. I think he said at least 90%. So there you go. And my point is that it is a business model where they need an emergency to collect on the insurance, to collect on taxpayers' money, so the federal government can pay for everything. That is the business model. So
which means the taxpayers pay for it.
And insurance as well, and reinsurance. We pay for all that as well. Anyone that pays for any kind of insurance.
We're subsidizing the insurance companies.
The rate is spread across all insurance.
Look at the scale and scope of this. The whole thing came down. It's ridiculous.
Actually, you're showing your screen now. Let me see. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would. Well,
it's controlled demolition. Right. So our friends at CDI, they did the thing, and I don't even know if there was a boat there. I guess there was. They just parked the boat up against the pylon, and then brought it down on top of it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably what they did.
Hey, Greg, you got anything else before we?
I don't know if Lynn talked about any movies during this podcast. I know she always likes to bring up movies.
Yeah, I do.
Do you need a movie?
Well, I mentioned the documentary Hacking Democracy. That's feature length.
I would watch that. I've watched that.
Okay, did bring up that one. But this is a fictional film about an election. The Last Hurrah from 1958. Starring
right, and they made a remake. They have a remake of it with Sean Penn. Yeah, the last...
No, you're thinking of...
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. The one they made with Sean Penn a remake of... No, I think it might have been The Last Hurrah. The Last Hurrah was a Boston New England movie.
What's that? The Last Hurrah. Yes, Frank Boston. Skeffington is an old Irish-American political boss. Okay.
Have you seen that one, Lynn?
Oh, yes. Not for a long time, but it was a classic, Tracy. Of course. Yeah. Broderick, I think, does Broderick Crawford play Frank Skeffington?
No, you're thinking of the one based on Huey Long.
Oh, no, that's a different one. But who plays in The Last
Spencer Tracy.
Oh, Spencer Tracy, you're right. Okay.
Basil Rathbone.
And Jeffrey Hunter is a journalist covering the election. So it's sort of like Spencer Tracy. He's sort of the mayor, and it's his last
right. His last campaign, yeah.
Are you recommending this one?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I wondered what Lynn thought of it.
It's considered a classic film.
Have you seen it, Lynn?
Yeah, but not for a long time. I mean, Spencer Tracy, you know, I've seen all his films just about. So Jeffrey Hunter's in it too. That's right, yeah.
He's played by O.Z. Whitehead, and he's like an idiot, and he's like the fire chief or something. And then his opponent is sort of like a television personality. Like he appears on television. The dog
won't. Right, and that's part of the plot of the movie is you're seeing this is the arrival of television for the first time because this is my childhood. The election of 1960, Kennedy Nixon. That was the first real televised election we had. I mean, even with Eisenhower and Stevenson, all you saw was newsreel footage. But 1960, they had like three or four televised debates. And the people who listened on the radio thought Nixon won the debates. But people who watched it on television overwhelmingly thought Kennedy won. And that's because Nixon didn't wear makeup. He had a 5 o'clock shadow. And Kennedy was perfect for, you know, the Kennedys. They're a family of actors, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that 1960 election. And The Last Hurrah is, in some sense, dealing with this rise of television and modernity and how it's changing all the old ward boss style of politics where, you know, politicians had to actually get down and it was corrupt. But at least people were personally involved. A ward boss would go door to door. He'd give away Thanksgiving or Christmas turkeys. Maybe give you some free coal during the winter if the man was out of work. I mean, there was a whole structure to precinct and ward boss politics. And television began to wipe that out. And then with the complete reorganization of the political parties, beginning with Lyndon Johnson, really, after the assassination of Kennedy, alleged assassination of Kennedy. You know, after that was when they completely redid everything and they started having primaries and they wanted to plug more people into the process. Initially, people weren't necessarily all that into getting involved or even voting. United States is legendary for its low voter turnout. High voter turnouts are the exception and not the rule. And that's because here in the United States, I think Americans didn't have as many illusions about elections as people do now. So, yeah, that's the last hurrah is worth watching. But also, Huey Long, I thought the movie about the couple of movies that had been made about Huey Long are also very interesting.
What is the title? It's directed by Robert Rawson. I know that much.
Is it Kingfish?
Has King in the title, I think. What King is the or name? Citizen or something.
Every Man a King or Kingfish or
Robert Rawson. Robert R-O-S-S-E-N.
And is that the one with Broderick Crawford in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's based on Huey Long, who was
Huey Long, and that's in the South. That the takes Hustler? Place right.
No, and, those and like are like I say, 1948.
Okay. 48, right. But, you know, that's old-style politics. That's gone in the age of media. You know what I'm saying? People don't go to... I mean, in a way, Trump has revived that old traditional politics, you know, because it had been fading. Who the hell would go out to a rally? You notice in the 2016 election...
All the King's Men?
All the King's Men. Thank you. Very good.
That's 1949. It.
49. Okay, I was off by
all the King's so, Men. So I always confuse that with the Last well? Hurrah. It's very similar to the Last Hurrah. Same similar kind of story.
All right.
Well, the all the King's Men is sort of like presenting the Broderick Crawford character as a threat, whereas the Last Hurrah is sort of a nostalgic film about an old.
Yeah, right. That's day. True. Yeah. The All the King's Men is really a statement about politics in the South and in Louisiana and generally, you know, that's, you're right, broader, more historically based. Whereas The Last Hurrah, his family, how it affects him personally. Here he's clinging to power when he really should probably be retiring and, you know, all that stuff. They try to personalize
got his whole, yeah. His whole machine of Irish friends.
All right. Okay, well, Greg, do you got any comments on the biggest show of all time, the U.S. election?
I didn't listen to this episode when I found out what it was about. I don't care.
Okay. Well, everyone else does, so that's why we're trying to... We're in Normieville a little bit. We were allowed to do that, and Lynn doesn't mind, I don't think. So, all right, thanks for calling. We're going to wrap everything up now. We've been going over an hour, so... Thank you, Greg. Thanks for calling in. Greg Shalls. And Lynn, any closing remarks?
We should not hesitate to be very confrontational when it comes to questions like elections and whether they're real or fake. We should double down on that and double down on it hard. And the reason why is because, let's see, today we or yesterday we got Jeff Bezos.
Okay. What's he yapping about?
Yeah, and I took note of this. Let me bring it up real quick.
Okay.
The owner of the Washington Post, and it's not a big deal. There's nothing new here. But, gosh, why can't I find this now? Oh, here we go. I posted it for the benefit of our non-U.S. readers. Because a lot of people in Australia or the U.K. or Europe may not be paying attention. The Washington Post, the L.A. Times, and USA Today have refused to endorse.
Of course, yeah.
And that's kind of unprecedented. I can't remember the last time that was the case. It's obvious they think Kamala can't, they're not sure what's going to happen. And they don't want to endorse a loser because clearly they would have endorsed Kamala. Right? Even yeah. Washington Post readership is declining catastrophically by the moment.
Yeah.
And they probably have to run at a loss right now, which is no problem for Jeff Bezos.
It's just propaganda. But yeah. Most newspapers, I would imagine, operate at a huge loss.
Right. And we the last few weeks, have been hearing panicky speeches by John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, and then UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on the very shaky state of institutional legitimacy and the loss of control, that's what Hillary's talked about, of social media. So it should come as no surprise that Jeff Bezos can openly admit the obvious that the collapse of legacy media leads to a vacuum, and nothing is more dangerous or destabilizing to any society than a power vacuum. And here it is, the Washington Post opinion. Mm-hmm. Bezos published this himself in the Washington Post. The hard truth, Americans don't trust the news media. Golly, what a revelation. So what does this mean, guys? They're admitting it openly. We don't have to make that case anymore. Mm-hmm. We're beyond that now. We don't have to argue about the corporate media or the mainstream media. And yeah, democracy is fake. Elections are fake. There was a whole discussion we can get into about the nature of democracy. And in particular, I come from the Marxist critique of democracy, which calls it bourgeois democracy. And defines something called proletarian democracy as distinct from bourgeois democracy. They would say bourgeois democracy was voting in elections where the candidates are hand-picked by the capitalists. And proletarian democracy is when workers in a union vote to ratify a contract.
Uh-huh.
So they would see a difference there. But always, they're hardcore realists about this, and they recognize the fact that the state is an instrument of force and coercion. And therefore, elections are never going to be fair. No matter where you're living, it's always a dictatorship, even if it calls itself a democracy. It's just a dictatorship of the people who can afford to buy the most votes. And the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision said it. Money is speech. And there should be no restriction on how much you can spend to buy an election, as Julius Caesar did quite successfully.
Beautiful. All right. Well, good stuff, Lynn. And next week, of course, we'll be back with our Fakeologist election coverage.
Are you going to force everybody to watch this election?
Yeah, we'll just do a little bit on it. Why not? Mix things up a bit. Maybe
some people are taking voting polls. Do we want to do a voting poll on this? A point spread or anything? Ask Jake Gibson if he's
saying that. That's Jake. Yeah, I wouldn't even place a bet. It's 50-50 in my eye, but who knows?
Well, you know, it is interesting to consider what for us as fakeologists and auto hoaxers.
Yes.
Does it really make a difference to us? It might, in a very subtle, nuanced way, you know.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't really make a difference.
Changes our emphasis.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. But it'll be a good show nonetheless. So that's why we're watching it. For anyone that wants to criticize us for talking about this, I know it's not fakeology, but we can talk about it from a fake.
And I was going to call out another general because I named the names. I named H.R. McMaster, Stanley McChrystal, the Flynn brothers, General McKenzie. And now I'm going to name General John Kelly.
Oh,
he's
right.
In the news calling Trump a fascist.
Right, right.
And he was chief of staff for Trump for a year and a half. And this guy, Kelly, is a 9/11 traitor for sure. A 9/11 liar, a 9/11 coward. And a 9/11 traitor to his country. And I'm calling him out, John Kelly. So don't everybody ever say we don't identify who the perps and the traitors are.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Lynn. This is a good show. And don't forget, this show doesn't make itself. If you want to support, give value for what you think this show is worth, or just for coming to chat here, fakeologist.com/donate, and we'll see you tomorrow. Fake Nukes Phil, he'll be back, and he's got more rubber babies and other topics. Thanks, everybody. Good night.